WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
WrestleSpective Radio at fairtoflare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Don Owens of the Future Endeavors podcast, and we're here to talk about Capital Punishment 2011. Don, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you, my friend?
Doing real well. Glad to have you back on the show, talking about the latest WWE pay-per-view, and thought it was a pretty good show overall. Some interesting things happened. Not the best show. Main event was a little disappointing, but overall, you know, enjoyed it for the most part. Thought there was some interesting things going on. What'd you think?
Yeah, you know, overall, I'd have to give it a thumbs up. You know, first ever Capital Punishment. You know, on paper, it was, you know, I was really stoked going into it. I thought on paper the card, seven matches, looked to be really, really solid. And I was really stoked for this one. I'd say about four or five of the matches really stood out and were really good. So you know, overall, out of seven, I mean, or actually it was eight because of the bonus match. But, you know, so half the card, very solid. So, you know, I say good effort.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the big match first. The main event was John Cena against R-Truth for the WWE title. And I've really been a huge fan of the R-Truth character over the past couple of months. Just since the heel turn, he's really been on fire as a character, doing some really interesting things, I think, playing around with some of the stereotypical stuff he had to do as a babyface, kind of rubbing fans' faces sort of in some of those stereotypes. And I just think it's kind of really fascinating stuff. It seems like some thought has really gone into that character, whether it's from R-Truth himself or whether it's writers or both, probably a collaborative process. But I just really thought that just he's really been on fire, really is getting under the crowd's skin, so to speak, and I just think it's really cool. And so I was sort of disappointed in this match where it was an okay WWE main event style, John Cena style match, but I really thought that R-Truth really needed to kind of emphasize his stick a little bit more, really kind of play to the crowd, kind of get the crowd into it, kind of do stalling, heal it up as much as he could. And I just kind of thought it was more, he was fighting a championship match and trying to win it. And I just kind of think for the character, that didn't quite work for me. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I was looking really, really forward to this match. Like you said, I've been a huge supporter of R-Truth since this heel turn. He is on fire. And honestly, I think if you had to ask me right now who my favorite character is, I'd have to go with R-Truth at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, I look more forward to him coming out and talking than anything else going on right now. He has just been top notch, you know, and, you know, I'm so happy he turned heel. You know, when he was a good guy, it was just, you know, I liked him, but he was just kind of around that mid-level and he just wasn't going anywhere and everything was old and stale. And, you know, he did this switch up and he's just been on fire, man. I love this, like, crazy character and you never know what he's going to say and just the outburst and, you know, his sayings right now just are the best things going today. I mean, the little Jimmy stuff is just amazing. You gonna get got. Is another, you know, amazing stuff. You know, you shouldn't be booing me, you should be booing yourself. And I mean, just everything he's doing right now is just gold. And I am loving R-Truth. So I was very excited to see him finally get a WWE championship match. Excited that it was against Cena because it was somebody new and fresh for Cena to work with. The match was so-so. It didn't live up to what I was hoping it would be. You know, I expected more out of these two because I know they can do it. Just, you know, I don't know if they're still just kind of feeling each other out. I, you know, I would expect Truth to get another shot at some point here moving forward. I know they're already moving on to Punk being the number one contender, but you know, I'm sure, you know, before the summer's over, we'll probably see Cena and Truth again, and I think it'll be a way better match. So, I mean, as far as the pay-per-view one goes, it was decent. You know, the ending I thought was pretty cool with him, you know, trying to punk out the little kid and the kid splashing the water in his face, because that led to, you know, the great promo on Monday with R-Truth saying that, you know, he got by little Jimmy. So, you know, good stuff there. So, you know, decent match. You know, wish it would have been a little bit better, but hopefully next time.
Yeah. I also like the finish. I thought that was kind of good comeuppance for R-Truth. It kind of began with him, you know, drinking water and, you know, antagonizing the fans a little bit. So it was just kind of, and obviously he'd been, you know, he threw the water on the dad a few weeks ago and that sort of thing. So it was a nice kind of,
that was big Jimmy.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So I thought this was a nice finish. Like I said, I thought the match was kind of, it was kind of lackluster for the most part. I mean, it was definitely, it's just sort of the same WWE main event that that they always kind of do. And particularly Cena, you know, was, you know, kind of Cena went after him at first, and then Truth took control and, you know, got a lot of near falls on some of his moves. And, you know, it was certainly fine, but cause I just really think that they really should have kind of designed this match around the Truth character, and they really just had, you know, Truth wrestle kind of the same WWE style match that everyone does, and you know, with some of his flashy moves, which are kind of better for babyface anyway. So I don't know, just didn't quite click for me. But yeah, I think even if the character doesn't stay in the championship picture, even if this is just a one note thing, I think he's got a firm spot. He's really gonna groove, and if he's gonna be feuding with somebody lower on the card, that's perfectly fine. I expect he'll get plenty of promo time and, you know, be a major character for quite a while. I think this, you know, he's got a pretty good shelf life going.
Definitely, totally agree. Yeah, he's on fire right now, and I don't see it burning out anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah. The other big match would be Randy Orton and Christian for the World Heavyweight Championship, and this was another really strong match in their series. I don't think it was quite as good as last month's match, the pay-per-view match, but it was very good. Kind of the story of it was that Orton had just recovered from a concussion, but was still feeling some of the wooziness and some of the effects of that, which I thought was actually really laid out really well in the commentary, particularly by Booker, talking about Orton's footwork kind of staggering and some of those details. And I thought that I was noticing that the commentary got trashed quite a bit throughout the show, but I actually thought it was pretty good overall. I'm a larger fan of Booker than most people are, but I thought that he really did a pretty good job here. And he had some funny lines, and one of them was talking about when Christian, the idea of if Christian lost another match that he would need counseling. He said, I'm talking about counseling, man. I'm talking about laying on somebody's sofa to get back right. I don't know. That was, I'm not going to do a Booker impression because I would be very poor at that. But, I find those things amusing. I think he brings a lot of enthusiasm to things. I've talked about that before, but I thought, yeah, it was a really well structured match. The ending was a little out of nowhere. Basically, it was just, you know, they did some pretty cool near falls with kind of Christian missing a spear, then Orton missing an RKO, and Christian hitting the spear but only getting two. Before that, they did another RKO tease, but Christian got the Scorpion Death Drop for two. And then the final thing was Christian kind of jumping off the top rope and then jumping over Orton, and then Orton getting the RKO there. But then they show in the replay, and then they have Christian complain about having his foot under the rope, and eventually Orton sort of lays him out with a belt shot, which is kind of a dick move, but I guess the idea is that Christian was sort of being a crybaby. But they show the replay, and he sort of has a legitimate gripe. So what'd you think about it all?
I loved it. I mean, once again, I mean, I think these two guys have great chemistry together. You know, the ending part with him hitting him with the belt was just basically retribution, because Christian did that to him on SmackDown.
Sure.
So, You know, but I'm a big fan of these two right now. Like I said, you know, Randy Orton has just been fire also ever since that he got drafted to SmackDown. Christian, you know, I've always been a big Christian fan. Very, you know, happy he's in the main event picture. These two have great chemistry, have great matches together. You know, spoiler alert, you're going to see it again at Money in the Bank coming up. So we're going to get a fourth match in a row. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you could tell, you know, people are liking this feud. And I can dig it. You know, I can watch these guys almost every month and not be sick of it because every match has been different and they've all been really, really good. I would say this is, you know, out of the three matches, this is probably the worst one they had out of the three.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not saying anything bad about it. I mean, it's just I think the SmackDown match when Christian lost the title was probably their best match. That match was just so, so good. Mm-hmm. And the Over the Limit match was amazing as well. So this one was really good, too. I didn't feel it was on the level as the first two. But once again, I mean, pretty close to match of the night, if not the match of the night. So, you know, I mean, double thumbs up again. I mean, I'm interested for this feud. The ending, I was really hoping, you know, first of all, I was hoping Christian would win the title back. Second of all, I was hoping Teddy Long would come out and they would address the whole foot under the ropes thing and restart the match right then and there. Unfortunately, they didn't. So, you know, that's just what will, you know, give them time, I guess, to have him complain and throw his fit and, you know, earn his rematch, you know, at the next pay-per-view. So, you know, liking the feud, like these two guys, and I look forward to the next match when hopefully Christian will finally regain the title.
Yeah. A couple of other things from this match that I thought were neat. Orton did a really cool counter on Christian charging into the turnbuckle. He kind of did like a crucifix sort of thing, almost like a snake-like roll-up deal, which was pretty cool. And did another thing where he lifted Christian onto his shoulder and then hit sort of like a Hercules-style backbreaker that he used to do. So not like a torture. Like a torture rack, but in a different position. But then he hit a neck breaker out of that, which was really cool. And I love the commentary throughout. I talked about how good it was, but I just kind of thought that they were sort of talking about concussions and about how Orton is going to feel all this for years later on. It's just sort of an interesting discussion for them to have during this match with like all of the real life issues with concussions and wrestlers having injuries and stuff. And it, sort of just interesting to hear the announcers incorporate that into the story of the match.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was cool because, I mean, Randy Orton really did have a concussion. I mean, he almost didn't even get to fight at Capital Punishment. So, you know, I always like when they bring in a reality factor to the storyline. So yeah. I like that they, you know, it wasn't made up. They went with it. They told a story, they played with it during the match that it was affecting him and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So, I mean, you know, once again, I loved all that.
Yeah. And he, in order, did a good job of selling it and, you know, of selling the effects of it and stuff. That was really good. And, also one other more detail is that I thought, Christian did a really nice job of selling the struggle of not being able to get out when Orton had his draping DDT. That move always sort of, it just seems like that Orton takes an inordinately long time to set up that move, so it seems like more often somebody could be able to escape it, so it was nice of Christian to kind of add that little detail to be like, hey, I'm trying to get out of this, but I can't do it. So always cool to see stuff like that, and Christian, obviously, a guy who's really good at those small things.
Yeah, no, I like the way they played that one off.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, the... one of the other strong matches, maybe even the match of the night, would be Rey Mysterio against CM Punk, kind of revisiting their feud from last year. They had a couple of TV matches to set these up, both very good TV matches. One, the first that Punk won, and the second that Rey won. And this another great effort. Punk ended up winning this one. With after they did some neat counters of their moves. The finish was Punk trying for a GTS, but Ray getting an arm drag out of that. Then he which sets up Punk for the 619 position, but then Punk catches him and then counters him back into the GTS. And so just really a lot of cool near falls, a lot of neat moves. in Punk and Ray obviously are two of the best, and they had another awesome performance.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been going back and forth, having trouble deciding what was the match of the night. And like you said, I mean, it's either this match or it was Christian and Randy Orton. I'm leaning a little bit more towards this one. I mean, Punk and Ray, once again, just when you get two guys in there with great chemistry, just put on amazing matches. A lot of people, you know, I saw a lot of people on Sunday complaining about matches we've seen before and how certain things are played out. And, you know, and I agree sometimes, but when you have two guys with great chemistry, it's hard to get mad because they put them back together again. I mean, when you know you have a guaranteed, you know, great match on a pay-per-view, you know, why not put it together? I mean, Punk and Ray, you know, last year, a series of great matches. I mean, at WrestleMania and then, you know, doing the Mask versus the Straight Edge Society pledge, and then finally the Straight Edge Society pledge against CM Punk's hair, you know, and that's what ended up cutting, you know, Ray shaving his head. And I mean, just really, really good matches last year. So this one, just top notch, man. These guys work so, so well together. I love the ending, the 619, and then, you know, Punk almost dropping Ray and then kind of, you know, fixing it himself and kind of grabbing him and lifting him up, you know, and then dropping the go to sleep. I mean, the whole ending just played off really, really nice. And it was a nice momentum boost for Punk, who I think I read something that said that was CM Punk's first win on a pay-per-view since Extreme Rules 2010. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty nuts. I mean, that's a year he's been losing on pay-per-view. Yeah. So, you know, good to see him get the win. It's unfortunate he's leaving the WWE next month. But, you know, probably match of the night and great, great stuff as always.
Yeah. I might as well talk about that now. Well, first of all, it's funny because I would have had no idea that he had lost that many pay-per-view matches, which I guess sort of tells you, like, the importance of wins and losses as far as what they mean in the context of WWE right now. You know, for Punk to be at the level that he's at and having lost that number of matches kind of shows, you know, the match results kind of don't matter to a large extent, and they probably should, but it just kind of shows you that, that I think fans getting up in arms about wins and losses, you know, are missing some of the other picture of what wrestling is. But beyond that, of course, the big angle on Raw the next night was Punk announcing that his contract is expiring the night of Money in the Bank. He had a three-way with Ray and Del Rio that he won, another great match. So setting up the match between Punk and Cena with the idea that if Punk wins it, he'll take the title with him and just leave WWE with the title. So what do you think of that story, first of all?
Once again, you know, it's a great way of WWE bringing in realism to the storylines. Mm. You know, like we were just talking about the concussion for Randy Orton. It's been no secret that Punk has been on the way out for a while now. WWE's been trying to re-sign him to a contract. Punk's been saying no. The main holdup in their negotiations has been that WWE wants to own the CM Punk name, which CM Punk owns himself. And he's one of the last guys that actually has his own rights, you know. And we all know how WWE loves to, you know, trademark every name under their umbrella and, you know, own the rights to everyone. So Punk isn't giving up, and he's saying, nope, that's me, that's my name, and you can't have it. And, you know, that's pretty much been, you know, what the holdout is here. So obviously they haven't really gotten to a decision here, and, you know, Punk's decided to leave. He posted a really weird couple tweets Monday night, and someone had figured out that pretty much word for word, the three tweets he had sent put together equaled a blog that he wrote in 2005 when he was leaving ROH to go to WWE. So it's a pretty interesting comparison there, and I actually have a screenshot of it posted on the Future Endeavors Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/futureendeavors, take a look at that picture. It's pretty funny to see how almost word for word he tweeted what he, you know, about him leaving, and it matched almost exactly what he put when he was leaving ROH. So, what I'm just curious at is at this point is, did Punk resign, and this is all going to be part of the storyline now, with him supposedly leaving and trying, and everybody knew his contract negotiations, so they're using it towards the storyline now to get Punk to maybe run this angle where he might win the title, and then he's gonna leave for a little bit with the belt, and then they're gonna be scrambling to know what's going on. It could be a pretty cool, interesting storyline, honestly. If it is a storyline that he wins and then he takes the belt with him, so
Yeah, they could always have him just sit out for a month or something and then have something compel him that he has to come back or some story or reason for him to come back. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Because
right.
all the speculation about him leaving, I mean, that was all rumor and conjecture and blah blah blah. So it's hard to really say what's going on. But I think you're right. I mean, I think this is a story that works both for people who, pay attention to internet rumors, who are really devoted fans and read the websites and whatever, and it works fine for fans who don't do that. I mean, it's an interesting story for them too. You don't have to know all that to be compelled by the idea of Punk leaving or wondering if he really will or so forth. So it does create some buzz. It's a neat idea. And yeah, the interesting, of course, the parallels to the original. It's the Summer of Punk angle, I guess, from ROH. I don't really know, honestly, know that much about it, but we didn't. Well, never really watched ROH and didn't watch it then. But so yeah, and I think it'll be. I'm intrigued for what happens next. Whether he really leaves, I doubt he'll really leave as champion, but whether he just loses the match and leaves, it's a kind of a cool way for him to go out. If he if he wins and then has some sort of angle or whatever, there's a lot of ways they could go. It would be it's a pretty cool thing. I'm intrigued for sure. And of course, Punk, as we've talked about, has been just delivering awesome matches in the ring lately. He and Cena have had good matches this year, and could certainly be. If it is his last match in WWE for a while, I'm sure he's going to try to, go all stops and have a classic. And it sort of like Jericho in 2005. His final match for 2.5 years was a great match against Cena at that SummerSlam, and he went out kicking and screaming basically to as a way to sort of end that character. It'd be interesting if Punk does anything like that.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued. I was wondering, we had talked about on our show if, Punk was going to be, somehow become the number one contender, just due to the fact that Money in the Bank is in Chicago, and of course everybody knows, that's Punk's hometown. And then I had read originally that his contract wasn't up till September. So it was pretty, interesting that now they're saying that his contract up is the day after Money in the Bank, or the day of Money in the Bank. It's one of those two. So I'm once again, and I don't know if that leads me to believe that this is part of the storyline or what. But I mean, either way, it's pretty compelling. I mean, if he does leave, obviously I think WWE is going to want him bad enough to re-sign him and just let him keep his damn name. WWE needs Punk more than he needs them, I think, at this point. I think Punk's the type of guy that he doesn't care regardless. He's probably saved his money and, we'll do what's best for him, and so I mean, I give him props for standing his ground. I hope it is a storyline just for pure entertainment purposes, because I think that'd be really cool to go along with the storyline. I would hope that they would give him the title and, like you said, maybe disappear for like a month, and then it just then have them kind of scrambling like, well, we have no WWE champion, and then have to do something, or maybe start a tournament for like a new champ. And then Punk comes back and says, I'm the real champ, and they could do something along those lines to where he kind of stops a new champ from being crowned because he decides to come back. So I hope it's a storyline because I think it could be really interesting and something new and fresh. So looking forward to see where this goes.
Yeah, me too, definitely. Let's see, let's go through some of the other matches. We had opener was a Kofi Kingston against Dolph Ziggler, which was a pretty fun match, US title match. I would say, I would say decent, solid opener. Had some kind of neat moves, some good roll throughs and counters. Definitely picked up at the end, for sure. Kofi hit an SOS, and then which had a good near fall. Then kind of followed through some counters. Kofi sort of hit a cool standing drop kick, got another two, and they tried a superplex, but Dolph gets thrown off, and then they do a crossbody on it for two, which Kofi has a cool looking crossbody, and then they do a another SOS, which actually gets turned into a sleeper, and then Dolph is sent headfirst into the turnbuckle. And then toward the finish, Kofi misses the Trouble in Paradise, but then ends up holding the rope when Dolph gets the zigzag. But this allows Vicky to rake Kofi's face as he's draped in the ropes, and then Dolph sort of gets a awkward looking takedown sleeper, and then wins the match. And I thought it was odd that there was no three hand drop in the sleeper. I always I don't know. I don't know if that threw the fans off too, because the fans were a little flat at the finish. But anyway, it was a good match and probably good for Dolph to be U.S. champion again. Not that it really makes that big of a difference, but maybe gives him some momentum back. And he kind of lost a good bit of his momentum when he had the hair change and the dark hair. He has the blonde hair now, which looks much better. So maybe things are moving up for him.
You see, I like the dark hair. I'm not a fan of his Mr. Perfect bleach blonde hair that he has. I liked when he switched it up. But no, great match. I mean, I think this was probably the third best match of the night, honestly. I thought it was a great opener. These two guys, once again, have great chemistry. We've seen them feud a million times. When they were both on SmackDown, they feuded all the time over the Intercontinental title. Kofi won it from Dolph. Dolph won it from Kofi. There was a lot of back and forthness with them. So now it would only make sense that they, meet back up on Raw now over the United States Championship. So, pretty cool, fact for that Kofi and Dolph have both now held the Intercontinental and the United States Championships, which not a lot of guys have done. So, props to them. I had called that Dolph would win this. You could tell that they're putting the engine behind him right now for a push. He got fired from SmackDown, and then he showed up on Raw, and he hasn't really done much on Raw the last couple months since he's been there. So now you can. Last couple of weeks before the pay-per-view, you could see the engine, the wheels were starting to turn, and I figured that he'd win the title, and looking forward to see what he does with it. I like Dolph Ziggler. I mean, he's on the verge of becoming something really big. I mean, he's great to watch. I agree with you. I was really thrown off by the fact that they didn't check, Kofi's arms the three times to see if he was out. It almost seemed I had read something that basically the original finish was when Vicky raked his eyes, the Dolph would run up and hit the zigzag, and which you do see him try to do, and then it almost like Kofi holds onto the rope, so Dolph kind of drops, and Kofi didn't go down with him. So I think that the sleeper was an alternative end to the match that was not planned, and I think that it might be why the ref was kind of just like, and they probably yelled in his earpiece, "Just end the match." And he just did it, because I don't think that was the planned finish. I think he was supposed to hit the zigzag and pin him, but instead, had to substitute something real quick since that move failed, and he locked on the sleeper, and they just ended the match that way. So, props to Dolph for, flipping it and coming up with something pretty cool for the ending there. So, other than the little bit of confusion at the end, I mean, it was a really, really solid match. Glad to see a title change, and looking forward to see what Dolph does, and a great opener to the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking the same thing with the finish, that was a possibility. Although it seemed like Dolph had him in the sleeper position pretty quick, like right away. I couldn't exactly tell. Who knows what he was going for? But also another good Booker quote here, that it's good when you have a woman with a lot of money, you can do whatever you want. So wisdom of Booker T. Good match. Yeah, I mean, solid match anyway. I wasn't really as excited to see these guys again because I think this one was one that was kind of played out, but, you know, it was fine. I hope they move on to other things and not necessarily do repeats of it all the time. I think for one and done, it's good. For if they try to do another long feud, I think it would lose its charm pretty quickly. But we'll see. The next match was a pretty good rivalry that's been built up over the last month. Alex Riley against The Miz, and Alex Riley had one of the better babyface terms in quite a while. We were actually I was having a Twitter discussion the other day and thinking about like what babyface turns WWE has had in the past 5 or 6 years that have been, you know, really, you know, at this level, and the ones that we really came up with were few. Were Batista's babyface turn in 2005 when he first, you know, turned against Triple H in Evolution, and then, you know, Triple H's in 2006 when he joined, you know, or he, even Shawn Michaels reformed DX. And I don't think that this was quite at that level, but it was really, you know, fantastic with Miz berating him, and then finally Riley couldn't take it and just beating him up, just, you know, all around the ring and tearing his shirt off and throwing him on the table and all of that. That was really cool. And they've really given Riley some momentum. He's got pretty cool new music, you know, and seems to really be showing some really good fire as a good guy. I thought his comeback in this match, you know, was really good. You know, the action, it was pretty good. It was mostly, you know, kind of Miz sort of being cocky and toying with Riley and trying to get in his head. And the announcers definitely played up the inexperience of Riley and sort of that he was an underdog throughout the match. But I thought it was neat. I thought the ending, another good strong ending on the show with, you know, Cole sort of berating Riley and then Riley beating him up. Then allowing the Miz to knock him down and get him back in the ring. And Miz tries to bring the briefcase in, but the ref keeps him from it. And this distraction allows Riley to get a floating DDT for the finish. And it was a nice match. The crowd, they were sort of in and out of the match, but they were, you know, into the finish. I think they were behind Riley for the most part. And, I thought it was good. What about you?
I was so-so on this one. You know, I was looking really forward to this match as well. I've been a big Alex Riley fan, I mean, since his time on NXT. You know, he came in second place on that season, and, you know, I knew that big things were going to happen for this guy. And for the last year almost, you know, he's just been that lackey, and, you know, and then, like, you know, when on Raw, when he snapped and beat the crap out of Miz, it was awesome. It was one of the best segments I'd seen in a long time on Raw. I was just so impressed that, you know, as much as they've used Alex Riley as a jobber for the last year, how he just switched that fast and just, you know, shine taking out Miz. And then the following week, they get into it again, and I'm like, okay, now's, you know, the typical Miz is going to get the, you know, the best of him. And Alex Riley won that war too, again. And like you said, he's got this new music now, and he's got the total just good guy, you know, modern rock theme. And I was surprised with how fast the fans got behind him. I mean, he comes out now and you just hear the Riley, Riley, Riley chants. And that's pretty insane, you know, for somebody that has just, you know, recently made that transition from heel to face. I mean, that doesn't, you know, you usually don't get the crowd in the palm of your hands that quick, you know, and he just got it, you know, within a week. And so I was looking really forward to this match, you know, and I was hoping that they'd give Riley the win. I felt that he really, really needed this to continue that push that he's on, and he got it. So I was happy with that. But as the match went, I was disappointed because I wanted a more straight up fair match. And unfortunately, you know, most of the match was just Miz beating down Riley. And then Riley comes back pretty much at the end and he hits that DDT and gets the pin. You know, I didn't really like the finish. You know, the DDT has never been Alex Riley's finisher. So, you know, why was that enough to take out a former WWE champion? I didn't really get that, and I figured he was going to win with like a small package or something. So,
well, isn't a DDT more dangerous than a small package?
It is, but what I'm saying is like a small package, like I'd expect him to win with his actual finisher, if they were going to let him win by doing a move, he should have won with his finisher.
What's his finisher? I have no idea.
He does almost like an F5 like Brock Lesnar used to do.
Oh, okay.
It's really cool when he hits it. That's more believable to me. I didn't think that DDT was enough to pin Miz, and so that ending just kind of threw me off. I didn't really like that, and I didn't like the fact that, out of a 15-minute match, Miz just dominated him for 10. I wanted a more even, fair and square match between the two. That's what I was looking forward to going into it. So it was okay. I mean, it wasn't bad by any means, but in my mind, I just expected a different type of match. So it was okay. I hope that, I'm sure they'll go again here soon. And when they do, I hope that I get that more evened up match.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it for a first match. I think the story was good for a first match because of the idea that Miz at this point is better than Riley. So I think the idea that, Miz was more dominant in the match. And I think particularly to be cocky and arrogant and to kind of get his comeuppance for doing that, I think was good. I see your point. And, probably the longer the feud goes, they probably should be more on even standing by the end to prove that Riley is legitimately as good as The Miz or better or whatever. But at this point, yeah, I think the idea of Riley still trying to prove himself is good. I enjoyed the story, and I thought it was well done. And yeah, I never particularly thought much of Riley before this, really. Just never really clicked with me, but for some reason, and I, given his look, I would never have expected him to connect as a good guy with people, but he clearly has. I think that turn kind of shows the power of a really good angle to turn a guy that can still really work. It was definitely good times. I think we may have difference of opinion on the next match, but let's see how it goes. It is Alberto Del Rio against the Big Show, and the story behind this is that Big Show was accidentally hit by, or I guess run over his leg, was hit or run over by Rodrigo what the hell's his name? Rodriguez. Roberto Rodriguez, right?
Yeah.
why could I remember that?
Sorry. I did that. You know what's so funny that you did that? Because on Future Endeavors, I did the same exact thing. I totally spaced his name. And I couldn't for the life of me think what the hell his name was. Ricardo Rodriguez.
Ricardo Rodriguez. I was thinking Alberto Rodriguez. I don't know. I don't know how I did that. But
that's so funny.
Anyway, Ricardo. Ricardo ran over the Big Show on accident, injuring his leg. Big Show kind of came back a little fast from that, kind of 3 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks later, running to the ring, as only Big Show can do, to attack Ricardo and make his big comeback. And then on SmackDown, he absolutely destroyed Mark Henry as Mark Henry was getting into the ring and did a big, pounded him on the ground with some, really heavy fists and stretchered Mark Henry out. So kind of set up this match where Show ambushes Del Rio before the match and kind of goes after him. But then Mark Henry comes out and absolutely destroys him and hits him with a World's Strongest Slam through the table and then attacks Big Show's injured legs, which I just thought was a really great angle. I thought that really made Henry look really big and strong and tough, and kind of set up their deal really well and set up the rest of this match really well. Kind of Big Show decides that he wants to fight through despite the injury, and he's able to sort of power Del Rio at first, but then Del Rio goes after the leg and keeps kicking him down. And so it kind of sets up the whole thing with Show sort of being able to use his power, but then being limited with his leg. And he is able to get a choke slam, a really super hard one actually, but then sort of sends Del Rio out of the ring. And then later he Del Rio goes to the top, but then show gets his throat like he's gonna do another choke slam, but then Del Rio gets the leg again, and then Del Rio tries a cross arm breaker, tries his finish, but then Sho's able to power out, and then finally Del Rio goes after the leg, does a cross leg breaker, and Sho fights it for a while, finally is able to stretch for the ropes, but then he tries to get up a couple times, his leg collapses, and then the referee calls for the finish, and Del Rio celebrates very mightily. And I really liked the story here. I thought it was really, really well done. They didn't, keep it too long. It made Big Show look tough for trying to gut it out, even though he was really hurt. But Del Rio still won it, fairly legitimately. I mean, it wasn't like he, wasn't like it was some sort of like, bad interference or something. I mean, Show still put up a tough fight, and Del Rio still bested him. I kind of think it would have been better if Del Rio had just sort of won with the submission, with Show had actually tapped out. But that's quibbling. I still think it was a really well done thing. And so, what did you think, Don?
I don't know. I was disappointed. I mean, I knew going into this pay-per-view that this would be the weakest match on the card. But, I don't even really consider this even a match, what we got, because of the interference from Mark Henry and stuff. I don't really understand the point of bringing Mark Henry into this. Big Show's on Raw. Mark Henry's a SmackDown guy. So it's not really like a typical feud that they'd be trying to set up. I like the World's Strongest Slam through the table. That was pretty tight, especially to see him do it on a guy the size of Big Show. It's always very impressive to see anybody slam or do anything to Big Show. But, I was looking forward to a good one-on-one match. And, it just, turned into the kind of handicap thing. And then, Big Show couldn't really get his, he couldn't really get going because his leg kept buckling. And like you said, I mean, I agree with you 150%. I mean, Del Rio should have won by submission. It was laid out perfectly. It wouldn't have hurt Big Show. The fact of the matter was is he got beat up. He almost got counted out. Made it back into the ring on time. Del Rio kept working the leg, and he should have just been able to lock on that, leg bar and made Show tap out. I mean, winning because the referee stopped it was just stupid, because I don't feel that that really helped Del Rio, and it obviously didn't do anything for Big Show. So it just would have made way more sense to do it by submission, because that would have made Del Rio look a little bit, more legitimate, and it wouldn't have hurt Big Show, because obviously they laid the proper groundwork with the Mark Henry attack. So, overall, I can't even really. I don't even consider this a match. It was just more of, kind of a beat down, and it was what it was. So, I mean, I would, like I said, I wasn't expecting too much out of it, but it didn't even give me what I was hoping to get out of it.
Yeah, I like the story because it also like it kept it from them trying to like do like a traditional match, which I don't think would have worked as well. I just think this, had a neat story, and I thought Show was really good at like sort of just trying to being the sympathetic guy who was trying to do his best, even though he couldn't make it. And other than yeah, the finish maybe being a little flat, I thought it was fun, but another match was Wade Barrett against Ezekiel Jackson for the Intercontinental Championship, which didn't do a whole lot for me. Not that it wasn't okay, but it just I don't know, I don't think these guys really, neither one of them does a whole lot for me. I mean, they're fine, but I thought this was the weakest match on the card that I saw. And Ezekiel won the Intercontinental Championship, won it clean with the torture rack, and did okay reaction wise. Although the fans were chanting USA throughout a lot of it, which of course Cole points out that don't these fans realize that Ezekiel is from South America? And then Booker replies, "Well, he looks American." So that made me laugh. But otherwise, yeah, didn't do much for me. I'm guessing you, being a big Ezekiel fan, probably enjoyed it more than I did.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it just more for the fact that Ezekiel finally won the Intercontinental Championship, because this is something that, I was hoping they'd give him the belt at Over the Limit last month, but they decided to, keep the feud going. So, I've always liked Ezekiel, and I've been waiting for him to get some gold and get to finally dominate. And, just been waiting for that time. It was nice to see him pick up Wade, hit that torture rack. Wade Barrett tapped out and, new Intercontinental Champion. I thought it was a decent match. I thought their match was better than Over the Limit. And, decent stuff. I mean, not the greatest, not the worst. I mean, it was a decent match, so I can't complain about it. And I like the ending, and I like the fact that, both mid-card belts changed hands, and I think, some new people holding it will be, fresh for those titles. So looking forward to what Ezekiel does as the IC champ.
Okay. Well, a couple more things. We have a bonus match of Evan Bourne against Jack Swagger, which I did not watch, but what were your thoughts?
I liked it a lot. This was another really, really good match on the card. It kind of odd. You wouldn't really, I don't know, in my mind, I don't see Jack Swagger and Evan Bourne, having the greatest, feud or matches together, but they click, these two guys. I mean, they're both great in the ring. I just didn't know how they'd really pan out together, but, they've been feuding for weeks now on Raw. And Evan Bourne kind of keeps getting those sneaky little wins, and it's been good stuff, and I've been enjoying it. And it was a nice little bonus match. These guys work really, really well together, and it was exciting stuff. And you should watch this match. I don't know why you didn't watch this one, but this is one of the better matches on the entire night. So it was a great bonus match to get. Evan Bourne wins again, and the funny thing I thought about this was Michael Cole. Called it an upset, and I'm like, Evan Bourne has already beat Jack Swagger like 3 times. I mean, do you still call it an upset by that point? I know you were talking about the commentary earlier, and I thought the commentary was horrendous on this pay-per-view. We talked about this on Sunday's Future Endeavors too. I think the teams just aren't gelling right now. I think Booker T is annoying. I love Booker, don't get me wrong, but as an announcer, he is just annoying. He says the same thing for every match. It's bad. And then Michael Cole, constantly fluctuating from trying to be good play-by-play guy to, rooting for the bad guy. And it just, the three of them right now are just not working. They talk over each other. They give out false information. I heard Michael Cole say a bunch of stuff on Sunday that wasn't true. I was just like, where is he coming up with this stuff? And then on Raw Monday night, he kept talking about how Kelly Kelly was a former Divas champion and all this stuff. Kelly Kelly has never held the Divas championship. She's never held any title. So it's like there was this big deal about her winning it for the first time, but Michael Cole had already said by like 10 times that she was a former champ on Monday. So it just, I don't know what's going on with them, but they just seem lost. They seem all over the place, and it's just, it's annoying. But, kind of off track there. But as far as the match goes, I mean, it was a really, really good match, and, be curious to see if they extend the feud. I hope to see both of these guys in the Money in the Bank, ladder match next month. It was a very nice addition to the pay-per-view.
All right. I do agree about Cole, but Booker T is fantastic.
Not on the mic. He is.
No one can tell me different. last and certainly probably least would be the Barack Obama impersonator coming out, and I guess I did not watch this either because I cannot be bothered. But since you watched it, why don't you go ahead and describe it?
It was stupid. I mean, I don't even want to spend too much time on it. I mean, it was just, the impersonator coming out, and they tried to do a bunch of political jokes, and obviously the crowd did not understand what the hell was going on, and there was no reaction, and it was just embarrassing, and it was stupid, and I hated the whole Obama thing. It's like, I know they were trying to be cute because they were in D.C. and that whole nine, but, it just, it comes off piss poor, I think, to the older audience that, you know, I'm supposed to believe that all the superstars meeting this guy backstage are like, oh my God, Mr. President, and are going with this fact that this guy is so obviously fake, you know, but they're all making such a big deal that, you know, the president's there. And I hate when they treat everybody like a 5-year-old, you know. It's like, so the whole thing just didn't work for me, and it didn't really go anywhere. There was no point. It was just a time killer, you know, for, you know, in between, because they did, oh, never mind. Sorry, I was thinking something else. But it was just more or less just a time killer before the main event. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't want to waste too much more time on that.
Yeah. Well, we will. One more thing. David Buckler at DLB19338 on Twitter. He asked us if you would be obviously be better qualified to answer this question. Is the fake Obama dance the worst WWE segment in years? And he was at the show, and he says yes.
I don't even know. I saw that question earlier. I don't even know what fake Obama dance he's talking about. I didn't even see the guy dance.
Didn't he and Booker dance in the ring?
Oh, yeah. But that wasn't really dancing. I mean, he had him come in and they did a spin-a-rooney together.
Okay.
I mean, that's all it was. So
I believe technically a spin-a-rooney is a dance.
It's a move. It's okay. Not a dance.
Well, it's a dance move.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. The segment would have been cooler if that's all it was, but, you know. Then we had, you know, the fake president guy's trying to walk off, and Booker stands up and, hey, homie, come back over here, homie. You know, pulls him in the ring, and then they do the little spin-a-rooney together. So, I mean, the Baraka-rooney, I forgot what he called it. It was something stupid, but, I mean, it was all right. I mean, that was probably the most entertaining part of that entire segment. So.
All right, well. And I guess the answer is no. One thing that surprised me was that Obama impersonator, he was the night before was at some Republican event. And
yes, I saw that.
Yeah, and then he got booed off the stage for, I guess, telling some jokes that the crowd didn't like. And he was all over cable news on Monday, and then WWE didn't seem to do anything to take advantage of that. Which, you know, they're usually pretty savvy about that. Maybe they just thought the segment was so embarrassing they didn't care. Maybe they just had other things in their mind or whatever. But yeah, they, you know, none of that. It was, I found that odd considering their, you know, incessant need and of, you know, any kind of mainstream publicity they can get. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. They usually jump all over that. But yeah, I had read about that the next day, actually. I saw the picture and it said, I saw the article. It said, like, Barack, you know, impersonator embarrasses and gets, you know, kicked out of convention or something. And
sure.
I clicked it and I saw the picture of the guy and I was like, whoa, it's that guy from Capital Punishment. I had never seen that guy before. So it was kind of funny that he actually made the news the same weekend.
So. Yeah, I'd never seen him either. So, all right, well, let's. We have another question related to the show, which we might as well go ahead and take now before we get into the stuff. And it's from History of WWE, Graham Cawthon, who was on the last Retrospective Radio. And he asks that, why does it seem like that WWE was doing TNA finishes with an MMA twist? Which I definitely would say that the kind of the MMA sort of finish on the Big Show match, the you know, not being able to continue type thing, that's in more of an MMA style finish than a pro wrestling style finish. And show sort of been incorporating, I guess, you know, kind of the punches in the ground, sort of an MMA thing too. So, but there were a lot of like distraction leads to somebody getting beaten here. I mean, that's how Riley won. That is how Dolph won. That is how and that's how Cena won over R-Truth. So there were, but I thought all three of those were sort of done pretty well. You know, like I thought, like I hate finishes where like somebody comes out like from the back and on the apron and then like obviously distracts one guy and then the guy in the ring rolls him up or does some move or something. Like I think those are just kind of dumb. But it seems like all three of the finishes they did that involved interference were more like circumstance based. Like they were like, you know, with both Miz and Truth, they were kind of, you know, they were victims of either their arrogance or are trying to cheat or trying to get involved with the fan or, and so forth. And of course, you know, Vicky getting involved, was, you know, just a bad person, you know, taking advantage of Kofi, but just Kofi just happened to be right there, and the referee's back just happened to be turned at that moment. It was just more like taking advantage of the situation rather than like some sort of like elaborate fiendish plot that, you know, required like a whole bunch of, you know, just didn't seem realistic, I guess. So I would agree, maybe like three of those on one show is a little much, but I thought that was done pretty well. I don't know, what do you think of that specific statement?
That was another question I saw earlier, and I was trying to really understand. I mean, is he just talking about submission finishers? I mean, I don't really get what he's talking about MMA. I mean, I guess the choke out from Dolph on Kofi, but you know, I mean, I didn't really see anything else that really kind of stuck out to me as MMA. I mean, I watch him, you know, I'm a big UFC fan. I watch MMA all the time, and I haven't seen very many MMA finishes in the WWE, so I don't really get where that question's coming from.
Maybe it was well, there were three submissions. Well, two submissions and one. Not that a torture rack is going to submit anybody in UFC, but
Yeah, nobody's doing a torture rack in the UFC.
They should try. I mean, I've seen it work a lot in pro wrestling. I bet it could work in real life too.
Oh, it could work, but you know, try, you know, in the middle of an octagon to pick somebody up on your shoulders and apply that.
I bet
There's no way.
I bet Lex Luger could do it.
I hate to doubt Lex Luger, but
yeah, you don't doubt Lex Luger. You know, he's American made. So, I didn't really think of it. Like, I think of TNA finishes as stereotypically like convoluted and like involving like a whole bunch of like run-ins and craziness and confusion. And I didn't really see that here. I kind of get the question, but I didn't think it was quite as bad as Graham might be suggesting there. You know, again, you know, it's 140 characters. Maybe you don't always get like the, you know, everything you're trying to get in that amount of time, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a good guy.
We would definitely do that.
All right, let's do that. And then we'll go ahead and just take the, we got one other question. And I think this is just somebody, a buddy of yours trolling you, but.
Yes, I know. If he's talking about Frank Miller.
Yeah, Frank Miller wants to know why you love Body Slam so much. It's kind of eerie, actually. Is
yes,
that to do with Ezekiel's Body Slams that you mentioned?
It does. Show? Yes, it does. Because I hate it. And yeah. He knows I hate it. So every time Ezekiel wrestles, he seems to always send a tweet out talking about how I'm probably marking out watching the match. So still not marking out. I was glad that we didn't get 50 power slams, body slams at Capital Punishment. You know, yeah, still a pet peeve of mine to see the same move over and over and over again. So yeah, that was just a little rub on me right there on Twitter. So
yeah,
shout out Frank Miller 187.
There you go, Frank. Well, way to go. So yeah, now we of course we had Raw the next night, which we talked a little bit about. I guess the elimination match main event sort of set up a couple of things. With Christian beating Orton, kind of to set up their next match, which apparently was set up on SmackDown. You've read the spoilers, I haven't. Although I don't know, that was undercut a little bit with Cena just beating up Christian like 10 seconds later for the win. And Miz also cost Riley in one of the early eliminations, so seems to be continuing that. Not sure where R-Truth stands. I would imagine that he's probably has John Morrison next. Presumably they did recently, of course, you know, the explanation for Morrison's absence was that R-Truth beat him up, and then they had R-Truth, or they had Morrison teasing that he was going to come back and face R-Truth, but then before the match he was shown having been beaten up, presumably by R-Truth. So
little Johnny got jimmied.
Yes, indeed. So I kind of think a cool way to bring Morrison back would be to like have have someone like deliver a package to R-Truth, and then have R-Truth open it and be like little sunglasses, like with like a note from John Morrison, and then like Truth like freaks out, and then like, you know, for the next couple weeks, like you show him like walking random places, like in the back in the locker room, and he like comes like upon the sunglasses, sort of thing. Like, you know, then they, it's just kind of like a reminder of that Morrison is coming back. And then, you know, like Truth gets all paranoid about it. Maybe he like antagonizes some people like in the crowd with sunglasses, and like, it could get like kind of the whole sunglasses thing over more than it is. And also, and obviously build anticipation for when Morrison does come back.
Yeah.
You don't like it?
I like the concept of him kind of like teasing the fact, like, I could see it being like every week it's like something different, like maybe like the glasses 1 week, and then, you know, the fur coats hanging in his locker room the next week. Like, you know, just there's something different every week that kind of makes him see like, oh man, like, where's he at? He's stalking me or something.
But, okay.
You know, he should. You know, I'm expecting the next stop here for these guys is they're going to be in the Money in the Bank ladder match itself at the next pay-per-view. So,
very possible.
Know, we'll get a one-on-one match, and you know, until maybe SummerSlam. So,
yeah, I could see that. Maybe Truth refuses to do the match for a while, but they still have the, you know, Money in the Bank match. But then that's the reason why they don't do the singles match until SummerSlam. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think. You know, I've been trying to guess, you know, like, who's going to be in the ladder match. You know, if they stick with eight people, you know, it'd be kind of fun to try to figure out, you know, who's going to be in that. So, I mean, I would go, you know, John Morrison, R-Truth.
Evan Bourne,
Jack Swagger. So, you got four right there.
Ray.
Yeah, you definitely probably want to throw Ray in there. Del Rio.
Okay. Would
be another one.
Would Miz go back in there?
Miz, yeah, Riley? I'd say Miz in there. Maybe Riley.
Okay.
Would be thrown in there too.
Yeah.
Unless they maybe have Miz and Riley actually fight in the qualifying match, you know, so then only one of them can be in it. So that's another interesting way they can go with it.
Possible. Or they might do another singles match with him.
No, I think that Miz will definitely be involved in the ladder match just because he can play off, you know, the whole, oh, I won last year, so I'll win again this year. And, you know, I think there's too much of a storyline behind that for him to, you know, to get back into another Money in the Bank match, because then he can play off that, you know, he's going to do it again and all that stuff there.
All right, that's possible. Well, what about SmackDown? Who do you think is going to be the SmackDown one?
SmackDown, I'm going to say Wade Barrett, definitely. I think Wade will probably actually win it.
Yeah. Sin Cara, you know, will be in it.
I think Sin Cara, Daniel Bryan,
yeah.
Cody Rhodes.
Maybe Ted? Or probably not Ted and Cody.
I don't think Ted. I don't think Ted will make it.
Okay.
Let's see here. I'm thinking there's going to be like a wild card in there somewhere. Also that you might not expect, like maybe if they threw in like Justin Gabriel, you know, I think, because if they just throw in somebody that can actually take some good spots and, you know, do some exciting stuff, you know, Gabriel would do that, and especially with him in there with Sin Cara and stuff like that would be pretty tight.
Let's see.
They could put Kane in there again. I think Kane will probably go in, because same thing, like Miz, you know, he won last year, so
yeah.
I can see Kane being in it.
Ezekiel, you think he could be in it?
Possibly, you know, it's just weird with him being the, you know, and Dolph, you know, I can see Dolph being on the Raw one as well. So yeah, Ezekiel could be in it. Cause they usually do put the mid-carder in there.
Oh yeah. I definitely think Dolph will be in there. So probably Dolph instead of one of Miz and Riley would make sense.
And then, I think they could also possibly maybe even put in, Jinder Mahal. You know, he's undefeated and been on a roll lately, so, I mean, that might be something to kind of elevate him a little bit more, is to stick him in that match, too. Okay. So, there's another possibility.
Is Santino on Raw or SmackDown right now?
Santino's on Raw.
Okay. I always thought, like, the idea of Santino, like, I know you're not a big fan of his, but I thought the idea of him, like sneaking and winning one of the Money in the Banks, and then the whole idea is, do you actually believe that Santino could really be the WWE or world champion? And and he's also the guy that you could comfortably have lose. And the idea being, you know, that, okay, fine, now finally somebody at Money in the Bank has lost. So, you know, you sort of have now some, you know, less predictability involved in the Money in the Bank thing. So it's always been my idea. But some people don't like my ideas, and that's fine. I do believe strongly that I would bankrupt the wrestling promotion if I were ever in charge of one. So, but it would be a spectacular failure.
Like I said, I mean, if you put Santino in there, then I could definitely see your company bankrupting.
All right. Yeah, I don't see. I don't really see any other obvious ones. I guess. Maybe you throw Tatsu in there as sort of just a guy who takes a lot of bumps, or Tyson
Nah.
Kidd, one of those two guys.
Tyson Kidd, I could definitely see. You know, he's in a weird spot right now. I don't know. I mean, you probably don't watch Superstars, but if you've been following it, he has a different manager every single week.
Yeah.
You know, and it was Michael Hayes, and then it was Vicky, and then it was Armando Estrada, and then it was JTG one week, and then it's like it just keeps changing like every single week, and I don't really understand what the rhyme or reason is behind this. It doesn't make much sense. I wish they'd just kind of stick with somebody, but it's been a really weird angle that we can't seem to get to the bottom to.
Yeah.
Bottom of.
Yeah. Well, gotta keep you guessing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we'll be pretty close on that, on those predictions. You know, we won't be too far off there, no matter what ends up happening. Maybe Big Show or Mark Henry could be in the SmackDown one, or they, you know, or they just have a singles match. Who knows? But yeah,
yeah,
I mean, we have the basic idea of who will be in the mix. So.
Oh, we can't forget about we can't forget about Sheamus too. Sheamus will probably be on the SmackDown.
Oh
one.
Yeah, Sheamus. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
So Sheamus and Mark Henry, two guys that could be in that SmackDown one too. So
certainly.
There's a lot of guys that could actually fill the spots on SmackDown. It's a lot easier to throw names out, I think, than Raw right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, interesting to see.
But I'm going with John Morrison winning the Raw one and Wade Barrett winning the SmackDown one right now.
Okay, I will guess. Let me think. I will guess Dolph wins the Raw one. And I will guess that Cody wins the SmackDown one.
Mm.
Yep, that's what I'm guessing.
All right. Dolphin Cody.
Yeah, well, that's two heels, though. All right,
yeah.
Dolphin Sin Cara, that's what I'm guessing.
Oh, Sin Cara,
yep.
Going out on a limb there.
Yep, Sin Cara, that's what I'm guessing.
So I think it's too soon for Sin Cara, but
I think
Cody could be a possibility. I just wish they take that damn plastic mask off of him at this point.
Oh, come on!
It's stupid. It's so stupid. I do not like it whatsoever. It's annoying at this point because there's no reason for him to be wearing it anymore.
Well, the reason is that it's a psychological reason.
Yes, I understand that, but it's been long enough that they don't need to do it anymore.
You don't have patience for things. I think that's your problem. You're not a patient man. You just want everything to move like 1,000 miles an hour. It's like
you see, because here's the thing with Cody. I never liked Cody Rhodes, and then when he went to SmackDown and he became Dashing Cody Rhodes, I actually got invested in his character and I started to really like him. And then it's like then they went with the whole angle with Ray breaking his nose, and then you didn't see his face for a while, and then he started wearing the plastic mask, and his theme music changed, and he got all dark, and I don't and now I don't like him again. Like, you know, it's like he's gotten so much better in the ring, and he puts on good matches, but I'm just at a point again where I don't like him. I don't care, and I think a lot of that has to do with that stupid plastic mask, because it's hard for me to take him seriously with this big plastic mask on his face. You know, they need to. I'm just like, how long can you possibly do this? You know, it seems like he's still trying to run the angle of, oh, everybody's so ugly, put a brown paper bag over your face, but then he's standing there with a big plastic mask over his. So, you know, I think he should just drop that, and you know, he can continue this darker side gimmick, but without the mask. It's hard. It's very, very hard for me to take him serious at this point, and I've lost a ton of interest in his character since he's, you know, gone this direction. So
strongly disagree with you, my friend. Strongly disagree.
Doesn't shock me.
Yeah, not really shocked. So, all right, what else we have going on for WWE future?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously Money in the Bank, the biggest thing, you know, I was curious to, you know, last year, you know, being the very first ever Money in the Bank, you know, we saw what that did for Miz and Kane. I mean, Kane winning the Money in the Bank that night and then cashing in later in the night and becoming the fastest turnaround world champ.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, good stuff there. And then he went on for that big, you know, run there.
Yeah, that was outstanding too.
You know, Miz, of course, you know, all the time guessing when he was going to cash in, then he finally did and had a lengthy run with the title as well. So, I mean, this pay-per-view is proven to already be big things. It was one of the best pay-per-views of last year, that's for sure. So I'm looking really, really forward to this one.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Yeah, it was a great show. And so just really excited about that. Curious to see what kind of direction they start heading at SummerSlam. You know, very curious to see if Cena's going to lose the belt anytime soon, because, you know, the whole, you know, with him supposedly holding on to it till WrestleMania to fight Rock and stuff, and I'm still hoping that there's a period of time here that he'll drop it for at least a little bit. You know, curious to see where Del Rio goes from here, you know, because I know the original plan was to do Cena and Del Rio at SummerSlam, so still curious if they're going to go that direction, you know, because... You know, which they still, you know, possibly could. You know, I figured that R-Truth was going to get back up there, but at this point, I figure R-Truth will be in the Money in the Bank match, and then I think he'll fight one-on-one with Morrison at SummerSlam. So I think he'll be kind of out of the title picture for a little bit now at this point. You know, Del Rio needs something to happen. You know, he was on such a ride on SmackDown and at the top of his game and has such a bright future to me. And ever since he's been on Raw, he's just being barely utilized. He barely ever wrestles. He just comes out and talks every week. And, you know, finally was supposed to, you know, have a good match here at the pay-per-view. And then that turned into what it turned into and did nothing for him. So he really needs to get some momentum behind him again, especially if he's going to start getting title matches again. So, you know, hopefully they turn him around and, you know, just curious to see what happens with, you know, Punk and when he leaves and where does that leave the Nexus at that point, you know. So, you know, curious to see what happens with that group. You know, two of them are the tag team champions and you got Mason Ryan in there. So, you know, very curious to see how that turns around once Punk leaves. You know, if they play off an angle, like, how can you leave us? You're our leader or, you know, what kind of direction they run with that as well. So, I mean, a lot of little stories. I'm just looking to see where they go and how it pans out for everybody.
Yeah, I hope they just kill the Nexus dead because I'm bored with that.
I am too, and it is, you know, and I'm just sick of them still calling it the new Nexus when it's been the new Nexus now for, what, 6 months? I mean,
yeah. Come on.
It's not new anymore.
No, it's not new. Well, I don't know how long the new Dream Team were the new Dream Team. I don't even think the new Dream Team lasted 6 months. You probably don't even know who the new Dream Team are, so I'm probably, this is probably the wrong audience for that, but anyway. Yeah, so I think things are looking up a little bit. You know, Money in the Bank's obviously, you know, exciting pay-per-view. I agree with that. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, even though Cena Punk isn't exactly new, it's certainly, you know, it's fresh enough, and the, you know, the Punk story is obviously great, and, you know, everybody wants to see Punk in the main event anyway, so I don't think anyone's going to complain about that, even the people who are like, you know, we get nothing new type stuff. So, yeah, it should be interesting. I'm feeling okay. I don't think WWE's really been inspiring lately outside of, you know, they definitely have some strong, you know, heel work being done, you know, particularly on Raw with, you know, even though you're a little down on Del Rio, I think he's been fine. You know, maybe he hasn't had a whole lot to do, but I think this is kind of like a transitional thing where he's just sort of there.
I just think he's being wasted right now. I mean, I'm a huge Del Rio fan, and sure, I'm hoping for the best for him. You know, I just feel that ever since he's been on Raw, he's just lost a lot of the steam that he had from SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just sort of been standing still. I mean, I don't think he's really lost anything. I don't think he's really gained anything. He's just sort of, you know, they've just kind of incorporated him into this big show thing, and that's run its course. And now, you know, or maybe they'll do another, you know, who knows, they might do another match. But well, once that runs its course, then he'll be ready for the title. And I mean, that's my assumption. You know, he'll be ready for the title match. So, yeah, it should be interesting. I'm, you know, feeling like they're in a solid place, not in a spectacular place, not in a bad place. But, you know, they're sort of there. So, all right. Well, why don't you go ahead and plug future endeavors and whatever else you want to talk about.
Yes, of course. I mean, obviously, you listen to this, you love wrestling. So, if you're a wrestling fan and you haven't heard Future Endeavors, please give us a chance. We are live every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, on Blog Talk Radio. You can go to our website at future-endeavors.com. We are on Facebook, so facebook.com/futureendeavors. Of course, on Twitter, twitter.com/futureendeavors. Myself, I am DX Don Mega on Twitter, so twitter.com/DX Don Mega. You know, wrestling MMA talk live every Sunday night, so we always bringing you the latest and greatest, and you know, that all the happenings in wrestling and MMA. So, you know, check it out.
Cool. Yeah, everybody check it out. And Don, thanks again for doing the show, and everyone, thanks for listening, and until next time.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of fairtoflare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at fairtoflare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.